Hi, I'm Adam Reese. I'm an astronomer at Johns Hopkins University.
And I'm Elizabeth Tracy. Welcome to Great Ideas. Adam, you've got a lot of really cutting-edge research on something that a lot of us don't know anything about. In fact, I would predict that most of us know nothing about it, and that is dark energy.
Dark energy is something that we discovered only 10 years ago. So it's a new constituent of the universe. On the other hand, it's probably most of the universe. In fact, at this point, we think it's probably about 70% of the matter energy in the universe. And it's been posited sort of out of desperation to explain the observations we've made with telescopes that look as though the universe, not only is it expanding, but it's expanding faster and faster all the time. So we say the universe appears to be accelerating, which is a strange result. It's not what was expected. In fact, it is about as strange as if you took a ball and tossed it up in the air, and if it kept going up instead of falling back to the Earth. That's how surprised we were when we saw this effect.
This is, of course, extremely bizarre. And I have to say that, again, I'm going to think I'm like a lot of people. And when you talk about things like the universe is expanding, and moreover, its expansion is accelerating, I have to confess that means almost nothing to me. If you could give me some sort of practical idea of what that means, that would be great.
Sure. Well, the fact that the universe is expanding is something that was first discovered by Edwin Hubble, who is a famous American astronomer as well as the namesake of the Hubble Space Telescope. And he was looking at galaxies around us and measuring and noticing that they all appeared to be moving away from us. Now, he might have thought that they were just moving away from us because that was their motion. But what he found was that there was a pattern to this motion, that the further away a galaxy was, the faster it was rushing away from us. And he realized that this is the pattern you would expect if actually space itself was expanding, was stretching, and that the galaxies, you could sort of picture them as fixed to the fabric of space, but it's the fabric of space that's expanding. So just to give you an analogy, if you can imagine a loaf of raisin bread in the oven, and so if the galaxies are like the raisins and space is like the dough in between, if this loaf of raisin bread were rising as it baked, then it would look like the individual raisins themselves are rushing away from each other. And in fact, the further away a raisin was, the more dough there would be between the raisin and, let's say, another raisin, the faster it would appear to expand. And so it's not that the raisins are like tunneling through the loaf of raisin bread, it's actually that the whole loaf is rising. And that is what Hubble discovered back in the 1920s.
Okay. And so if we use that analogy, I understand this. So I feel really happy about actually understanding this. But does this mean that over time we would be further away from the sun just here in our galaxy? And if you shot one of those ambitious rockets out there, that in fact, even as that rocket is speeding toward its target, that target's going away?
So the reason this effect is not very apparent, even on the scale of our solar system, is that the gravity in our solar system, for example, our sun, holds all the planets nice and tight together. And the mass in our galaxy, in the Milky Way galaxy, mostly in the center of the galaxy, holds the other stars close to the center of the Milky Way. So our galaxy and our solar system do not expand in the same way. It's only when you get to intergalactic space, the space between galaxies, that the pull of gravity from all the matter in it becomes so weak, and so the universe can expand in between the galaxies. So this expansion only pertains to space in between galaxies.
Okay, so this is all Hubble's work. Let's turn now to
that's
your
right.
work.
The naive expectation was that once the universe was expanding, and the expansion might have started because of, let's say, the Big Bang, that over time, the gravitational braking applied by the matter in all the galaxies would act against that expansion, would slow it down. So we thought 10 years ago, by measuring the rate at which the expansion is slowing down, we would in essence be weighing the entire universe. We'd be weighing all the matter in it. And the more matter that was in it, the more it would slow down in its expansion rate. So what we actually saw was the opposite of that. Not only was it not slowing down, it was speeding up. And that implied the existence of another kind of component of the universe, not ordinary matter that would slow it down, but this stuff called dark energy, which is not a concept we made up at first. It's actually something Einstein himself had posited to exist in 1916 when he developed his theory of general relativity. He, at the time, was confused how the universe could be static, which is what he assumed it would be, and this tendency of matter in the universe to crush the universe, make it fall back together. So he developed something he called the cosmological constant, which could act just like this dark energy acts today, pushing the universe out against its tendency to collapse. Except the dark energy we see today seems to be winning the battle against the crushing gravity of the matter in the universe, actually seems to be winning and making the universe speed up and accelerate. It's a little bit like if you were driving a car with 1 foot on the brake and 1 foot on the gas. The matter in the universe and its attraction acts like the brake, and dark energy acts like the gas. Except today, we believe they're out of balance, so that it's as though you're pressing with your foot harder on the gas than on the brake. I had a car like this once that would stall out if you didn't keep a foot on the brake and a foot on the gas. And so I'm used to driving a car like this. Apparently, this is how the universe operates.
Okay, so what are the implications of this?
Well, that's a good question. Until we really understand dark energy, we're not going to be sure about what the fate of the universe is, because right now we have a label for this stuff, dark energy, and we have its sort of basic property, which is it makes the universe expand faster. But what we do not understand is its physics, and in particular, what is going to happen to dark energy in the future. If dark energy is what Einstein once posited, a cosmological constant, a basic constituent of the vacuum of space, then now that the foot on the gas pedal is stronger, it will keep growing stronger relative to the brake pedal, and the universe will expand faster and faster all the time. In fact, it will expand so fast that there will no longer be time for light to reach us from some of the most distant galaxies. So over time, distant galaxies will appear to wink out. They will appear to disappear from our horizon, and then closer galaxies will disappear until eventually only the Milky Way galaxy and the few nearest galaxies which are bound to the Milky Way will actually be visible.
Now, is this something that we're actually observing? Are these things seeming to happen already? And how do you evaluate whether they're happening?
Right now, that's a prediction of the theory. It's not a phenomenon that we've actually observed. We are right now still trying to come to terms with even measuring the basic properties of this dark energy. But it's something we're using the latest telescopes, the Hubble Space Telescope. Another element to the story that makes it very fun and exciting for scientists is to make these measurements, we need to look for distant exploding stars called supernovae. Now, you might ask, why a supernova? What's so special about a supernova? Well, if you're wandering through the forest, some people, so they don't get lost, they leave a popcorn trail, right? As they're eating popcorn, they drop a piece of popcorn every second or so, and you leave sort of a trail. If you're a curious scientist and you went back to that trail, you could actually analyze from how far apart the pieces of popcorn are, how quickly somebody was walking at various junctures. The supernovae are sort of the universe's popcorn trail. They blow up, and we have techniques that allow us to measure very carefully how far apart they are, how much time has passed since the light left the supernova and came to us. And so this provides us the means to measure actually the expanding universe, the fabric of space that is stretching and expanding over time. The supernovae are therefore a very valuable tool. Now, the challenge with a supernova is nobody announces when a supernova is going to explode. And in fact, it's like watching popcorn explode in your microwave oven. You never know which kernel is going to go next. And so we have to scan the sky, staring at thousands, tens of thousands of galaxies, just like you might look at tens of thousands of kernels of corn waiting for one to pop so that you don't miss one. So that's what we do now with telescopes, is we scan large swaths of the sky, looking at many galaxies waiting for a single star amongst 100 billion stars in that galaxy to explode. And when it does, we are able to make the measurements of how far away that galaxy is and how much the universe has stretched since the time that the light left that galaxy. And so this is the means to measuring not just how fast the universe is expanding, but how that expansion rate is changing with time.
Let's just talk more about dark energy then. What do you know about it so far?
Well, what we know about it can be probably summarized on a strip and a fortune cookie. We know that it makes the universe expand faster and faster all the time. We know it's about 70% of the energy and mass of the universe. We know that understanding its nature is critical to understanding the fate of the universe. What's very exciting about dark energy, and why physicists in particular are so excited, is dark energy and understanding it seems to live at the nexus of our two most successful theories of physics: quantum mechanics, which explains the physics of the small, and Einstein's theory of general relativity, which explains the physics of the large, in particular gravity. And right now, physicists are forced to sort of choose one of these two theories when they want to calculate something in the universe. They want to calculate something that happens on small scales, like the atom, then they use quantum mechanics. If they want to calculate something that operates on large scales like the universe, then they use general relativity. Dark energy is so confounding because it seems to require us to use both of these theories at the same time, except these theories don't work together. And this has been known for a long time to be a major problem. In fact, it's something Einstein worked on throughout his life, is trying to unify our understanding of quantum mechanics and general relativity, or physics of the small and physics of the large. So dark energy is giving us, and nature is really giving us, a peek at how it's figuring out how to make these two theories operate together. Even if we can't understand yet how it operates, somehow nature, of course, must know how to do that problem. And so it's giving us hopefully some important clues.
Uh-huh. But that still doesn't explain much to me about what exactly is dark energy.
If it's what Einstein thought it was, it's actually energy in the vacuum of space. And so we're sort of taught in high school science that vacuum means that there's nothing in it. When you have a vacuum, it says you tell all the particles to get out, you clear everything out, and it's just a little space without anything. But quantum mechanics tells us that there can still be energy in the vacuum of space. In fact, that it might be impossible to fully evacuate a region of space, that energy may just come in to it, and we call that energy vacuum energy, or sometimes we call it zero-point energy. And if that exists, it would have exactly this property of what we call dark energy. It would make the universe accelerate. Yet we've never been able to exactly calculate whether this should exist or how much of it should exist. And so the simplest interpretation, I know it doesn't sound very simple, is that this is this basic property of the vacuum of space predicted by quantum mechanics to always have energy in it, that you can't get rid of the energy. And this may be what we're seeing. On the other hand, it may be something altogether different. It may be something like in string theory, it's posited that there may be 10 or 11 dimensions of space. And when we are confined or stuck in our three dimensions, we may become confused about how basic physics operates, how gravity operates. And so this dark energy may just be an artifact of, for the present, our inability to understand the extra dimensions in space.
Hmm. So whenever I think about things like this, I always think about like pre-Franklin days, when the idea that electricity must be out there and that it was somehow there, but we lacked the ability to observe it, to measure it, or to harness it, was definitely operational. So would you say this is a similar situation?
Yeah, I guess I would. I mean, this is frequently the case when you observe some phenomenon and yet you still lack the theory to deeply understand what it means, then you just throw up your hands and say, what a strange result, what a strange thing. As I said, if you tossed a ball in the air or your keys in the air, you would expect them to fall to the ground. If they went up, you'd be very confused. You'd want to understand why that is and what that is. And so we're right now wrestling with trying to understand what this dark energy is. But we feel that it's one of the biggest questions in physics now, because it seems to be shining light on this area of physics that we never quite understood.
So now you are credited as being really the first person to characterize this.
Correct. I was a postdoc in Berkeley, California about 10 years ago now, 1997, and I was analyzing a set of measurements from our team consisting of the Doppler shift, which is the stretching of the wavelengths of light exploding stars called supernovae, and the apparent brightness of these supernovae, which would indicate their distance, the same way a pair of headlights on a car at night gives you some sense of how far away the car is from how bright the headlights are. And so I was analyzing these measurements, and I thought I was trying to measure how much the universe was slowing down in its expansion, and therefore how much matter was in the universe and retarding its expansion. And my computer kept giving me a strange result. It kept saying there's negative matter in the universe, which is not possible. But at the time, I didn't appreciate that this dark energy could exist. And so my computer was giving me the only answer it could with the degrees of freedom I was providing it. And at some point, I realized that perhaps this cosmological constant existed in the universe. And I introduced that into my analysis, and the computer responded with, I'm 99.8% sure that that is a real constituent of the universe given the data. And this was a very strange result at the time. In fact, you're so used to, as a young scientist, of getting the wrong answer all the time, right? You work out a math problem, you check in the back of the book, you say, oh, I got the wrong answer, how did I get this wrong? And when you see something strange, your first assumption is, I got the wrong answer, what did I do here? And I worked for a long period of time, just cross-checking my results step by step, and I couldn't find what the mistake was. So at some point, I started talking to the rest of the people on my team, and I would ask them to check this part or that part. Nobody else could find a mistake. And then at some point, the only scientifically honest thing to do is to publish the result and see if people in the community can find the mistake. At some point, you convince yourself it's not a really boneheaded mistake. And so then you ask the community to help, and it's been 10 years since then. And not only have they not found a fatal flaw in the analysis, but they've corroborated it in a broad range of ways. So at this point, we're getting quite confident that this dark energy exists.
And you also have someone else who we could describe as a competitor who's looking pretty hard at this, too.
Yes, that's right. So there were two rival teams that were making measurements at the same time. And it was very exciting because we knew we were working at the same time. And yet we were using different techniques, different measurements. We would follow each other night after night on the same telescopes frequently. You know, sometimes the weather would be good for us. Sometimes it would be good for them. And it was sort of a race to get to this point, although we had no idea that we were both seeing something so strange. And so when we both saw the same strange result, you can imagine it gave us, and I think them as well, a great deal of confidence that this was the right answer, in the sense that when you did this experiment, this is what you should see. Now, what it actually meant for the universe has been something we've all been wrestling with.
So you've already identified in your original analysis the computer as a tool that was extremely important to you. And you said that you had certain constraints that you placed on it in its analysis. I'm wondering about the importance of that right now. Do you suppose that there are constraints that are being placed on the analysis that computers do that may be keeping important clues cloaked?
I think that's right. In particular, the ultimate constraint that we put on is lack of imagination, I would say. And so we need to be very open-minded when we consider dark energy. In fact, as a scientist, I find it very hard because I frequently get manuscripts from people in the public saying, well, could dark energy be like this or like that? And in the past, one might have said, oh, well, you haven't followed enough of the physics that we do know to come up with a good theory. But nowadays, when we're really struggling to understand dark energy, we don't want to rule out any idea, no matter how crazy it is. And so today we have to be very imaginative, very creative, very open-minded. And that is a lesson that I learned a long time ago, is if you tell your computer, tell me what the result is, but it can only look like this or this, then you'll get a very limited response. And so we need to be very creative and imaginative today and not put too many constraints on what dark energy might be doing.
Very good. Adam Riess, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much.